Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello there from Bedford. How are you all? Did you all have a good Christmas? Did you drink too much? Did you eat too much? Did you watch Die Hard, the greatest Christmas movie of all time? Well, I hope you all had a great Christmas anyway. A couple more shows left to go this year. So welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which is brought to you by Kraken, the best place to buy, sell and trade Bitcoin. I'm your host, Peter McCormack, and today I've got a very emotional interview with Jack Mallers, where we review the Lightning Network in 2019, but Jack also tells me a story I didn't know about him. But before that, I do have a message from my amazing show sponsors, and let's give them a listen. I've had this incredible year, but I wouldn't have been able to do it without sponsors, so please do check them out. So first up, we have BlockFi. Yes, the amazing BlockFi, the future of Bitcoin and financial services, and what an amazing year they have had. When I first started working with BlockFi, they provided crypto-backed loans, but they have added interest accounts for your Bitcoin, Ether, and GSD, and they've dropped minimum deposits. They've removed the early withdrawal penalty, and you can now choose to receive the interest payments in the currency of your choice. They also raised a boatload of cash this year to expand their business, and they've added support for institutions. So a massive congratulations to Flory and Zach for smashing it this year, and best of luck for 2020, and thank you for supporting the show. Love working with you, BlockFi. If you're interested in checking BlockFi out, I do recommend you do your own research, then head over to BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com. And next up, we have the most secure and badass exchange out there, the mighty, mighty Kraken. Without doubt, the best place to buy, sell, and trade Bitcoin. And what a year Kraken's had too. They started off the year with a rebrand. They then acquired crypto derivatives trading platform and index provider Crypto Facilities. They launched Kraken Security Labs to improve security across the whole industry. They went mobile with Kraken Pro, a beautiful mobile-first app so you can trade Kraken wherever you want. They recruited Bitcoin OGs Dan Held and Pierre Richard to the team. They expanded their OTC desk with the acquisition of Trade Circle. So many things I couldn't even fit in. So congratulations to Jesse for building the best and most secure exchange in the world. And best of luck for 2020. And thank you so much for supporting the podcast. Find out more at Kraken.com or download the app, which is available for the iPhone and Android. Just search for Kraken Pro, which is KrakenPro. Okay, so onto the show, and this was recorded just before Christmas. After I went out to South America, I took a flight over to Boulder. Bitcoin mum posted a picture of a bison she had. So I sent her a message and said, I want some of that. And she was like, come over, come and stay, come and have some bison. So I did. I got myself a flight over to Boulder and hooked up with my favorite Bitcoin family, the Mallers. Had the bison that Bitcoin mum cooked me. We had some champagne. So I agreed to record a show with Jack as well. We wanted to do a show on the Lightning Network, but I was also joined by Bitcoin mum and Bill briefly at the start of the show. So I went there to talk about Lightning with Jack. And in the evening prior to it, he told me this story that I don't know. I don't think I knew. I have this kind of like vague memory of it. Maybe it was before I really knew Jack and Bitcoin mum and Bill very well, but he had this accident 2 years ago where he basically nearly died. It was very emotional, but he told me this cool story about when Andreas came to visit him in the hospital and they were talking about Lightning. So I said to him, look, do you mind me telling the story? And no, he was keen. Jack agreed to do it. Bitcoin mum and Bill added a bit in, and look, it gets quite emotional. It was a very emotional experience to go through, so I do want to thank them for sharing that with me. We did also get into Lightning, and it was really interesting to hear how Jack's opinion on Lightning has changed over the last 6 months. I think it has become much more thought out and balanced, and where he sees a huge use case for Lightning, which was something I wasn't expecting at all, because me and Jack first met in Boston at the start of the year and recorded the show. And, you know, I've watched him develop Zap, and, you know, he's talked to me about his kind of changing view on Lightning. So that was very interesting to get into. So, yes, a very cool show. The coolest family in Bitcoin. I do love them. I got to say, I love this family so much. Whenever I'm out in Boulder, they really do look after me. So thank you so much. Any questions about the show, do hit me up. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And just a final note, the year is coming to an end and so much has happened. I've been on something, I think it was like 84 flights I calculated. I don't think that includes personal flights. I think it's over 90 with personal flights as well. I've got to visit 18 countries. I've launched a second podcast. There've been lots of ups, lots and downs. You know, I'm not going to say it hasn't been stressful, but it's also been just the most amazing, incredible year. I feel so blessed to get to do this job, to travel. and meet so many amazing people and have so many amazing conversations. So I'm really looking forward to 2020. My focus next year is going to be adding video to the show, which is something I know nothing about. I will learn it on the job. So the first few videos might be a bit shit, but so be it. But looking forward to doing that. And look, a massive thanks to all the sponsors, listeners, anyone who's done anything to support the show. Thank you so much. I love you all so much. I hope you all have an amazing 2020. As ever, if you've got any questions, feel free to hit me up. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Here we go again. Back in your dining room.
Yes.
Thank you for having me last night. Thank you for dinner.
You're welcome. Always a treat. Thanks for the champagne.
You're welcome. Morning, Jack.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good. A bit tired. Long year, but here we are again. So, Jack, you and I were going to get together, take two for a lightning thing, and I've got a feeling this will be a lot better in person.
I hope so, yeah.
And a few things have happened since we tried, so that's good. But last night when we were sat down having a glass of champagne, you told me a story I'd never heard before. So whilst we're going to talk about lightning, I think people need to hear this story because it's fascinating. So do you want to go first? You know what, Brooke, start by telling us the phone call you received, because okay. That's the starting point yeah. for you, right? And then Jack can do the backstory.
Yeah, so Jack lives in Chicago, and his dad and I live here in Colorado. And we got the call no parent ever wants to get. At like 4:30 in the morning. This was April 4th, April 5th in 2018. And it was Jack's best friend. He's like, my nickname's Cookie, so Cookie, I don't want to scare you, but Jack's had a fall. He's in the hospital. He's in the ICU. And he fell backwards off of a first floor landing in Chicago and hit his head. And so far he has 3 brain bleeds and he's not conscious. And so we'll keep you updated and we'll call you. I don't know if you have to fly to Chicago yet. We'll find out. And I woke his dad up and, you know, we just obviously couldn't go back to sleep and waited till we got the next call the next morning to see what would happen. So maybe Jack wants to take it from there and explain what happened.
What happened, Jack? What do you remember? Were you told?
Yeah, so I lost memory an hour or two before the fall and an hour or two after. So a lot of the story is just people that were there. Yeah, I just started dating this girl who I date today. And we were heading home from an event. And she was living in Wrigleyville, where there were steps up to the front door,
like
European,
on the outside,
almost, right?
Yeah, I know the job.
Yeah, so we walk up the steps, and I'm just leaning on the rail, and the rail was just rusted, and it rotted and flipped me over the side, completely snapped. I fell 13 feet on my head, totally unconscious, and she looks down, as she recalls, and I'm just, like, blood leaking from my head. I'm totally unconscious. My pinky was facing the wrong way. I was just bad news. Yeah, I went to, in the ambulance, which I don't remember, I supposedly woke up and was fighting to try and get out, but with such an injury, they don't know if your spine is damaged too. So there's like police pinning me down to this bed. Can you imagine not having context, waking up in an ambulance with police pinning you down? I was freaking out. I had no idea what was going on. And I had three brain bleeds, a collapsed lung. And throughout the hospital process in the first few days, it was really scary because there was a serious chance I was going to die. This is hard to talk about. And I wasn't able to talk. So I would wake up and they'd ask me my name. I wasn't able to say. And they would try to have conversation. And I was making noise, but I wasn't making words. And so it was pretty scary. And
you're fully conscious at that point.
Yeah, kind of.
Did you think you were talking?
I don't have enough of a... I remember being in the hospital and I remember waking up and my girlfriend was there and my friend Dylan and my friend Max were there. And I remember seeing them, but I don't remember like any of the conversations or what I was trying to say. I mean, the fact that the doctor said I couldn't say my name, or for example, I would have exercises like, can you count down from 100? And I wasn't able to do that, or like the alphabet, I wasn't able to do.
By the way, we didn't know this because we were still in Colorado. And so I'm kind of glad we didn't know.
Yeah, it was definitely, I mean, hearing my friends recall it, like no one knew if I was going to be the same. Like it was a pretty safe bet at that point to kind of assume that I was never going to be the same. And over the days, I had gotten better. So I stayed in ICU for a total of 5 days. And I think it was the third day where I started to get visitors outside of my girlfriend and my friends. And in comes Andreas. And Andreas Antonopoulos.
As he does.
As he does.
And as he appears in people's ICU. Yeah,
he's been a family friend of ours for a really long time. And we have a relationship that I'd like to think exceeds Bitcoin at this point. So he comes in. And I recognize him, and I'd been doing these brain exercises, and I've been getting better, but certainly nothing to impress. And he sits down, and he starts asking me questions about lightning. And at the time, it was about Neutrino. So Neutrino is a new light client type of proposal that improves on the traditional light client that we know today, this SPV Mike Hearn type of light client. And it's by Lalu Roastbeef of Lightning Labs. And at the time, Lalu had just published a couple of BIPs, Bitcoin Improvement Proposals. And Andreas just started asking me, you know, what is your opinion on Neutrino? Do you see it working with Zap? What are the privacy trade-offs? Of course, if we want it to be reliable on like a P2P standpoint, we'll need to implement it into Core. Like, when do you think that will happen? And all of a sudden, I start to have this dialogue with Andreas where I'm answering him, like, you know, it's definitely an improvement on Bloom filters. You know, it allows the client a lot more responsibility, which means that it's a bit more expensive on the hardware. But the things you can do, like operate a lightning node on your phone, is really powerful and it's a really clever idea and it's long overdue. And I'm having this conversation, and about 2 hours go by, and Andreas leaves. And the doctor looks to my girlfriend and goes, man, I think we need to take him in for another CAT scan. Like, that wasn't good. And she goes, no. Believe it or not, that was English. Because the doctor's like, he was Neutrino, and he said something about roast beef, which is just like a sandwich meat. And I was like, no. That was English. Like, I was actually, my brain is working again. And so, yeah, that's how lightning ties into the story. I end up on my birthday getting my final CAT scan, where if it went sour, I would need brain surgery.
And that was the same week. By the way, this happened like 3 days before your birthday?
Yep. And I got the CAT scan. I told the guy, which we had built a relationship at this point. So like, man, if I can get a few things for my birthdays, Bitcoin price can go up, and if my brain can stop bleeding, like, how about it?
Aww.
And he rolls me in there. And when he rolled me out, he was like, your brain stopped bleeding, man. I don't know what happened. No one saw that coming. But you might end up being okay. I'll quickly end it. I'll never forget, Brooke tweeted out that it was my birthday, so just totally doxed me, but that I was going to be okay. And I will never forget being handed my phone for the first time and seeing the outcry of Bitcoin Twitter supporting me. I almost getting emotional talking about it.
Yeah, well, it is a really great community of people. I mean,
oh my gosh, people really were like, what? And then if you Google Jack Mallers, one of the term is Jack Mallers accident. So I guess enough people have been searching about that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, people know from this podcast at this point, I dropped out of college, and, you know, you spend a lot of your early adult life like alone in the basement of my dad's house learning this Bitcoin thing. And all of a sudden you blink and you have such a traumatic life event and people all over the world like supporting you. I'm going to cry, man. I'll never forget that. Yeah. Bitcoin has a special relationship to me that's so important. But yeah, no, that's how lightning ties into the time I almost died, is the doctor thought I was getting worse because I was trying to explain to Andreas these two new BIP proposals. And my girlfriend was like, I kid you not, I think he's actually speaking English. I think it's a good thing, not a bad thing.
Well, it is a great group of people. Personally, I've experienced it traveling around the world. Like, I'm in Austin a few days ago, and then I see Mom post a picture of a bison. So I drop a little joke.
The famous bison roast that is the gift that keeps on giving.
And she's like, come over. So, yeah. You know, I lost my mum a few years ago, so Brooke's now becoming my... adoptive mom. And I think you would have really got on well with my mom, by the way. But I know, like, I'll come here, you'll put me up, you try to get me a hotel. I was like, no, that's my cost. But, like, there are so many good people around the world. Like, if you forget about all the toxicity and fighting, it is a really great group of people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So just a couple of questions on that before we close out on that and talk about the year. But long term, there are things you have to consider, right? You have to be aware of, keep an eye on.
Yeah. So with head injuries, it's a little different than breaking your wrist, because you can get infinite x-rays on your wrist until they're confident the bone is fully healed. But for your head injuries, the radiation to your brain from a CAT scan, they have to really meter them. So afterwards, it was a little scary. The doctor, the first head specialist I saw, was really encouraging me to stop coding and having a profession that dealt with so much money management and high stakes, and to take something that was much easier, both on my mental health and just like brain calculation power. So that was really scary. I obviously, as people can probably guess, I didn't listen, which turned out okay, but at the time was super risky. And yeah, now at this point, all my CAT scans are fine, but head injuries have really long-lasting effects that you can't really get diagnosed. So things like my mental health are always a concern. They were prior, and now even more so. And yeah, people pick up slurs, like their language may slur or have stuttering issues, symptoms like that that can appear years after. Okay. Just from traumatizing brain injuries. But so far, so good. I'm actually, so this April will be my 2-year anniversary, and yeah, how far, like, Bitcoin and my career and everything, I'm pretty proud of where I am.
Well, yeah, like we talked about last night, you got NFL players reaching out to you. Pretty fucking rad.
Didn't I tell you the first couple of months, too, not only did they say, Jack's super athletic, I don't want you playing basketball, there's no obviously no boxing, you know, that kind of thing. So he comes to visit us, and he is riding up, we got these new e-bikes, and he's riding up and down this hill outside our house on the e-bike with no helmet, and he's going so fast, and I'm like, Jack, you have to remember these things. You cannot have another, you can't fall, you know, you can't hit your head.
But you get, like, it almost feels like it's out of a movie, but you get to that point where you have such a life-changing experience where someone is telling you that, like, you're not allowed to be the person that you were and that you want to be anymore. And, like, any human being, especially someone like myself, is just like, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
Like, not personally, fuck you, because I know you're a doctor and you're doing your job, but at the same time, like, fuck you. Like, I would rather, like, fail trying to be who I want to be than have to, like, take a back seat because a railing snapped. Like, that's just never who I'm going to be. So, yeah, like, I play basketball now. I obviously run a lot of interesting projects and, you know, trade, and like there's big money around in this industry, and I try to ignore it. I'm obviously, if I have any symptoms, I'll go to the doctor, but so far I've been pretty lucky. Yeah. I'd say.
Well, I'm glad you told me that, because I've already been super impressed by you as a person, but as a family, yeah, I love and adore you all. And I'm trying to remember if I can't believe I wouldn't have seen this on Twitter at the time, but maybe it happened before I knew you, so I didn't recognize it as such, but it just makes everything all the more impressive. So it's fair play for everything you've done, and thank you for sharing. Bill, do you want to just jump in quick? Anything you want to add?
Take my mic.
I don't know, you know, Jack and I have been through a lot. He's my oldest son, and we've been through quite a bit, and that was really tough day. I mean, like Jack says, I'm gonna start crying. That was tough. Yeah, that was. It was like the middle of the night. It was like 4 in the morning. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, should we smoke some weed? The situation. We had a similar situation with my sister. I was at university. I was 20 years old, and I got a phone call one morning from my uncle saying, oh, how's your sister? I'm like, I don't know, fucking call her. He's like, oh, you've not heard? I was like, why? He said, oh, don't worry, she's just had a little accident, she's fine. I'm like, well, this doesn't sound good. So I ended up phoning my parents, no answer. So I ended up phoning the hospital, and I get through to my mum, and she didn't want to worry me. So she was like, no, she's just had a little accident, she was hit by a police car, but she's fine. And I was like, really? And I was like, okay. I don't think I've ever told this, by the way. And then so I'm not worried at that point. And then 5 minutes later, there's a knock at the door, and my brother's there. And bear in mind, I'm nowhere. My brother lives hundred miles from me, so he's come to get me. And at that point, I knew there was a problem. And then I get to the hospital, and my dad's outside in his car having a cigarette, crying. And my dad never cries. And so my sister was hit by a police car. I think it was something like 55 miles an hour. She broke both legs, both arms, her ankle. And when she landed, she landed on her face, on her teeth, which saved her life. Anywhere else, she would have died because she landed on her teeth. It shattered her teeth, but that took the brunt of the force. And she died three times. I think it was three times during the night, and they resuscitated her. And when you talked about being unable to talk, I remember when she woke up, and that was a very emotional moment. But she couldn't talk. You could see her trying. She couldn't talk, and it was really sad, actually. She was a very good netball player. She was played for Great Britain universities, and she was, I think, one below in England plays, but she never played again because of that. I mean, she's fine now. I'll tell you a funny story as well. So when she was in the coma, the doctors told us that to talk to her and sing to her and tell her things. So we got her a little stereo. We were playing her ABBA songs. But I was just like, no one in the room. I was like, Lorraine, you're having a baby. You need to wake. Bear in mind, she's a lesbian. And I was like, you're having a baby. You need to wake up. Anyway, apparently I wasn't in the room, but 2 days after she woke up, my mum came and said, oh, the strangest things happen. Lorraine was like saying, where's my baby? Where's my baby? Calling for a baby.
So, oh, my God.
Yeah, so I can understand a lot of what you've been through. You're going to realize how fragile life is. So, yeah, thank you for sharing that with me. I'm glad you guys are in my life.
You can tell kind of emotional among the Jack and Bill here. Yeah.
I think I understand a bit more about it now seeing it. So.
Yeah.
All right. Should we talk about some lightning stuff, Jack?
Yeah, shoot.
You're up for that. All right, man. Well, listen, this is take two. We tried to do it before, and I screwed up on the tech.
I screwed up too.
No, that was my fault. Not your fault.
Can I say, though, now that I'm done crying, I'm super proud of all your success, man. I didn't really get a proper introduction, but the success of the podcast is so cool. So congratulations before we start.
Thank you. I couldn't do it without people supporting it and putting up with my stupidity and stuff. But I always prefer doing it like this in person, right?
It's so much better.
So thank you, and congratulations on your success and being friends with NFL footballers and love the world over.
You know, I grew up obviously a huge sports fan, and when Russell won his Super Bowl in Seattle was when I was graduating high school. So I actually remember watching him win that Super Bowl next to my dad in his living room. So it is a crazy world where you grow up idolizing these guys and then you blink and they're in return idolizing you over fake internet money. I couldn't believe it. I screenshotted, I sent it to all my friends. I was like, you guys remember that Seattle team? Marshawn Lynch, Russell Okung, Russell Wilson. He likes Bitcoin and he knows what Zap is. It was a very cool moment for me.
It's pretty badass. I had one the other day where both Fred Wilson wrote a blog about one of my shows that he'd listened to the show with Andreas, and I was like, "What? This is surreal." It is I was saying before once. I don't know if you've heard me say this. I said, "The harder you work, the weirder life gets."
True. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, listen. Interesting year. We first spoke about lightning. It's funny. It doesn't feel like it feels longer than was it March we spoke first?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've known you longer than a year. It's weird. So much happens in a year. But I was doing my lightning series and I was interested, but didn't really. I thought there was a lot of issues with lightning as a user. We're now at the end of the year and almost every concern I have is gone. I think a huge amount has happened, probably on the tech in the background that you can explain, but also I think most importantly for me on the UX front. So how do you think the year has been?
As far as lightning goes,
yeah,
fantastic, of course. To your point, 8 months feels like 8 years ago, and I think that just says a lot about the progress, technical progress, UX progress, product progress, just the natural magnet that lightning is to talent. You've got talented designers, talented engineers, talented product. I mean, the Jack Dorseys of the world are now putting skin in the game, so... Yeah, I think the year's been absolutely fantastic.
All right. Well, I'll talk about, as a starting point, talk about my experiences at El Salvador, because that was really interesting. And there was a, after I talked about it, Mr. Hoddle put out a tweet, which was really, really good one, where he said, I've always said this, but depending on who you are, your need or use of Bitcoin might be different. And that kind of singular idea that Bitcoin is gold or Bitcoin is money is wrong. And he was right. So I was at LibitConf, met this guy who lives in El Salvador, and he said, oh, we're running a Bitcoin project. Do you want to come out? And I was like, yeah, cool. So booked a flight, and he took me down to this village. It's like a seaside village. Village is probably the wrong word, but a little seaside town, surf town. And what happened was he got approached by somebody who said, I want to invest in a community project. And in El Salvador, they have a big problem with education to kids joining gangs. So he created this project where if the kids committed to their education, didn't join the gangs, they could have a job. And the job would be cleaning up rivers, clearing up rubbish on the side of the road, helping old people. And soon they're going to be adding lifeguarding. And they clock their hours, and at the end of each week or 2 weeks, they get paid, but they get paid in Bitcoin. And then what happens is he went around to all the local shops, the hairdresser, the cafe, but these aren't like, this isn't like Boulder type cafes and restaurants. These are side of the road things, and who don't have card services. None of them have banks. And he said, if you accept Bitcoin, we'll create this kind of circular economy. And what was, there was a few really interesting things about that. The first one being is that Lightning Bitcoin is essentially money in this town. It's a way of get paid and a way for people then to spend that money. And secondly, it genuinely is a banking the unbanked, which is a thrown around term, which is a weird term, but it's genuinely banking the unbanked because these people can't get bank accounts or card services. And I was able to buy dinner there, even though I didn't have any cash on me. So that for me was an eye-opening experience for seeing the use of Lightning. And the reason they had Lightning was, they moved to Lightning is firstly, he first started paying people in Bitcoin, but these kids are buying a 25-cent suite and then paying a 50-cent transaction fee. But the other reason is at the end of the week when the retailers were batching up the transactions, lots of tiny transactions, and he was ended up sometimes paying $8 to process them. So that was a really interesting experience for me.
Yeah. No, that sounds great. I agree with Mr. Hoddle in the sense I've always had the opinion that Bitcoin is in the eye of the beholder. You know, there's people in Chicago that got into Bitcoin to get really fucking rich. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a fantastic use case, if you ask me. But there's people that, you know, use Bitcoin because it helps them survive. And I think that's also a fantastic use case. So yeah, I mean, the fact that you get to experience that firsthand, a lot of Bitcoiners fantasize about it, but I don't think a lot can say that they've been able to experience something like that. So that's fantastic. I have a few questions how they're doing. So can you walk me through, on one of your videos, I saw the wallet of Satoshi.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, like, are they using these custodial wallets to do it? Right? Because I'm trying to find like the value, because I can create an app that isn't Bitcoin that just updates a database and say like, all right, you, like Salvador coffee shop, you now have $20. And if this kid pays you one, then I'll up the database to 21. And it's not your money. I control it. I update everything and you have no access to it. You don't have the keys, but it acts as money to you. And I can, now I've unbanked, or I've banked the unbanked without Bitcoin or a bank with Jack Bucks. So I'm kind of, but I don't blame them for the custodial nature, because Lightning still is at a point where non-custodial isn't a superior experience. And at the end of the day, they're trying to accomplish something and they don't care about crypto Twitter points and they don't care about full nodes. Mm. Like, they need to get something done. But I guess then hidden somewhere in there is where the actual value of Lightning is, because using a custodial wallet doesn't really tell me a lot about why they value Lightning. Like, I could come out with like a better version that doesn't even use Bitcoin at all, right?
Yeah, so there's a few things to put in there. So the guy I met, I don't know how deep down the Bitcoin rabbit hole he is. I think he's newer to it, say, than you are, and he's figuring his way through it. And it's also a charity project where Bitcoin was donated. So, and there's a couple of things to consider. So these people aren't going to be running full nodes. Some of them don't have electricity, so they're not going to be getting a castle node. And
well, so let me be clear. I'm not trying to lay an expectation that they should be. All I'm attempting to do is say, well, if custodial wallets are solving their problem, then maybe like a custodial database without even having to deal with Bitcoin and volatility and like all of that on-chain settlement at all, like maybe we can just have like a Postgres database coin. Mm-hmm. And I'm just merely trying to understand the value Lightning gives, mm-hmm. not trying to project like any maximalist values on anyone.
Next up, I talked to Jack more about Lightning Network and its value proposition. But before that, I have a message from my amazing sponsors. So Wire, they've got two shows left in their sponsorship. So come on, let's give them a massive bump to end the year. And what a great year they've had too. So many people talking about Wire. So many people talking about the work they're doing. But you know what? It's not recent. They've been crushing it since 2013. Wire are helping companies across the space offer Bitcoin onboarding. So it doesn't matter if you're a solo developer or a large team, if you want to simplify user onboarding, if you want to offer your users a fast and easy way to purchase Bitcoin, then you need to talk to Wire. They focus on taking care of all the pain in the ass items, compliance, payments, and liquidity, so you can focus on building your core offering. If you've got the idea for the next killer app, do not let those regulators kill it. If you want to find out more, reach out to Wire or create a developer account at sendwire.com, which is sendwire.com. Also, my newest sponsor, Scott Offord, and his company Crypto Mining Tools. Let's give him a final boost this month. He will be sponsoring the show again next year. We've got something booked in for May, but let's give him a bump for the new year. Scott is a Bitcoin mining consultant, and I want you to check out his Bitcoin mining profitability calculator. It's available at cryptomining.tools. You can enter your estimated uptime to get more realistic profit projections. It also includes the impact of the Bitcoin block reward halving. So if you're wondering which miner is the most efficient or has the best chance of breaking even, you should try out their interactive hardware comparison chart as well. As an ASIC mining equipment broker, Scott helps you make data-backed decisions. He can help you find hosting or raw power and the land to get your miners up and hashing. If you want to talk to Scott, he's on Telegram or Twitter at OffordScott, which is OffordScott, or you can visit cryptomining.tools, which is CryptoMining.tools. And lastly, but not least for this week, of course it's not least, it's Dropbit, the best mobile wallet in the business. And Dropbit have killed it in 2019. When I first started working with them, they told me they are the Venmo of Bitcoin, how you can send and receive Bitcoin via text as well as your BTC address. But it's been a year of nonstop innovation. Firstly, they added the ability to tweet Bitcoin, which I have used so much. Then they added support for Lightning. Then they added support for Batch32 addresses. And then they closed out the year with the ability to buy Bitcoin in the app. It's been an amazing year. Love working with the guys. Loved hanging out with them up in Ohio. Love going to their event. I really can't wait to see what they're doing in 2020. Well, I know a little bit, but I'm not going to tell you about it yet. But they've got so much cool stuff coming. Absolutely crushed this year. So big thanks to them also for supporting the show. Seriously, if you've not checked it out, come on, don't be a loser. Download Dropbit. The Lightning wallet is now open to everyone, and it's available for the iPhone and Android. Just head over to dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. El Salvador doesn't have a culture of saving. People earn and spend. And he said one of the things he's trying to do is teach these people about the value of Bitcoin and the fact that they can save for their future, and if they have their time preferences correct, this can make a real difference to their lives later on. So say a kid's earning $100 a week, he's encouraging them to say, okay, spend $30, $40, $50, $60, but try and save a bit. If you keep saving, you know, you're 15 years old now. When you're 25, this might be a life-changing amount of money for you. So that's one of the things. Also, he does want to get people to the point of being non-custodial. But one of the conversations we have, and I haven't found a good enough answer for yet, is that private key management for somebody who's living in a pretty impoverished area of El Salvador is very different from us living in London or here in Boulder. So, for example, we might get something like a billfoddle or two of them. We might stick one up in our attic or in a safe in the wall that nobody knows where it is and stick another one in our office, right, and have some kind of security procedure. Or we might have some kind of procedure with the likes of Casa Hodel. These are people who have a mobile phone, live in a mud hut. So there isn't, no, they hadn't come up with a way of teach him private key management. And that's a topic we were talking about. But the goal is to get there. It's sure. just how do you provide it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this may transition us into our next topic, but I've spent a lot of time in the last 4 months or so really trying to understand why Lightning is important, like, period. Mm. As simple as that. And so there's a lot of narratives that end up getting crossed over onto Lightning because it's just lazy way to do it. For example, like Bitcoin as a savings technology to teenagers in El Salvador, like that's probably a really cool use case. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with Lightning. I can pay you in Jack Bucks on Postgres and then also tip you in Bitcoin and tell you not to spend it. That would, right? And like it would be on chain. Maybe I give you like a Trezor or something. Like that is nothing. Saving on Bitcoin not only has nothing to do with Lightning, but Lightning is almost like the opposite. Lightning is intended as a payment rail. You should never custody Bitcoin on top of Lightning for saving. Like it is totally like counter to the principles of the system almost.
Well, we should, I mean, one of the things is this guy's open to having talking to people and helping with them. Like, so I left there with questions unanswered and also the want to go around the world to other places to see how people think about money and using money. But I imagine these people need, these users in El Salvador probably need a Bitcoin wallet, Lightning wallet, an ability to have some form of private key management so they can get the full Bitcoin experience that you and I want. They can use Lightning to transact, save in Bitcoin, protect their private keys. But it needs considering in the environment they are in.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel bad in this almost newfound role that I have doing this user research. So we've been testing our Olympus stuff and all of this stuff. And I feel bad because people always, their first reaction is that I'm like projecting like this maximalist value and that I look at them as littler than me because I run a full node. And that's exactly what I'm not doing. I'm just purely trying to find like why Lightning is even important to them, right? Like, who cares?
For them, Lightning's purely cash in sure. that economy. It's money.
Yeah, and I mean, there's like so much when you talk about key management, and key management in Bitcoin is complicated enough. Key management with Lightning and like the different signing with Lightning is so complicated. So there, I think, you know, if someone wants to use a custodial wallet and like there's trade-offs with that, like that's totally their decision. And I think that they're probably making the right one right now. They're just, the tools aren't there for them.
Yeah.
And if they want to use it now, I think that that's probably the responsible decision. So yeah, I just am, I think that Lightning right now is this hobbyist market is what I like to put it, is that all of our users are the same people that follow us on Twitter and all of our users are long Bitcoin. And when you talk about $100,000 Bitcoin, you talk about an ETF, you talk about institutional capital, you talk about Lightning scaling to the masses, right? And so a lot of our users are using Lightning for the purpose of advertising Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if we've truly understood why Lightning, if at all, is valuable on its own and the value props that could actually cause it to be used at scale outside of people that are just back holding Bitcoin. And I'm I'm being like a little bit harsh, but I think, you know, we're at a point where our user base needs to start to exceed Twitter.
No, you're fair. And the tough questions need asking. You know, I mean, we all agree a privacy is important, but what are the trade-offs? How much work are people willing to put in for full privacy? And, you know, you've got to think, if I want to send some money and I can do it on Venmo or I can pay PayPal or I can do it via my bank account, say I want to say I owed your mum some money, it's very easy. I can actually pay your mum in Bitcoin pretty easy because we're both in Bitcoin. But for people outside of this world, if you explain to them, oh, well, if you use Lightning, you get better privacy in your money. But what you need to do, you need to go to an exchange, signed up. You need to get some Bitcoin, put it in a wallet. You need to then convert that into Lightning. You might need to open a channel. And even then, you still don't have perfect privacy. So, like, you're asking the right and fair questions. My view at the moment is that if the long-term goal is that there is hyper-Bitcoinization and we have Bitcoin takeover, then Lightning will be the means of transacting in those economies. And so that's what I saw in this is almost like a mini hyper-Bitcoinization. These people are getting Bitcoin, but when they spend it, they need the confirmations to be straight away. So if you're going to a restaurant and you've ordered some food, they don't want to wait an hour to confirm it. They want it instantly confirmed. So that was the place where it became cash, the cash part of it, hyper-Bitcoinization. Was it perfect? No. And like I say, one of the things there that really got that I couldn't stop thinking about was how do you deal, you know, if Bitcoin can really be helpful for developing countries, just say it can, and if it is a banking the unbanked situation, well, how does that actually plan out? Because volatility is definitely a problem for these retailers. It's no good for them if they've accepted $1,000 in Bitcoin and there's a 40% price drop 1 week. That's terrible.
Yeah.
So they need to have the ability almost to have an instant conversion into the local currency. So they're dollarized in El Salvador. But then again, how does private key management? And the only solution I can think of for private key management for people in this scenario right now is some kind of trusted scenario. It is a service provided by someone like a Blockstream whereby, or a Casa, whereby they have the ability to custody it securely. But that it's not... You know,
multi-sig help. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, I'm going to start repeating myself, but from what I'm hearing, it sounds like Jackbox would be far superior than Lightning for these people, right? Because if you're saying the value in traditional commerce for this El Salvador town is that once you transact, that it settles immediately and there's no such chargeback or waiting period, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they're kind of like trusting the custodial wallet to actually go about this, right? Like, and so I can say the same thing. I can say, well, why is the wallet of Satoshi's word better than mine? My words are the best. You can use Jackbox. You don't even need to own Bitcoin, deal with any of the volatility, deal with any private keys. My database is top notch. It's been around for way longer than Bitcoin. Postgres is like 30, 40 years old. And yeah, like my word's just as good as wallet of Satoshi's. And so like, I guess, and oh, if you guys want to save Bitcoin, like I'll hand out a bunch of Trezors, and once a month, if you guys are good citizens, I'll tip you some Bitcoin, and you shouldn't spend it until you're 25.
The only counterpoint I'd add to that is that that requires you building that infrastructure for Jackbox.
It would take me 12 hours.
But they have to trust that you're going to continue to maintain it.
Right.
So, what I'm saying is with Bitcoin, the infrastructure's there.
Well, but they're not using the Bitcoin infrastructure. Like they're trusting their custodial wallet to maintain it, and it's the same trust level. So I know I'm being hard on you.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just like Lightning is not being used in this user story for its inherent properties of how it was designed and why it's supposed to be valuable. And so I just think this happens a lot, though, is that like we glorify a lot of this stuff. And by the way, like I'm one of those people, and I really have a tough time opposing myself against, you know, my family of crypto Twitter. But I think like these type of questions like should definitely be asked, because we're at a point now where Lightning is mature enough and reliable enough where it works, to your point, right? Yeah. Like it works,
it does.
And you can make payments. So like we need to really hone down and understand why it's important. And if we really want adoption, or else we wait for the next bull market, everyone gets, you know, double their Twitter followers, and sure, they'll be double the amount of custodial Lightning users, and we'll just continue this type of like...
Yeah. Well, I told you before, whenever... Because I don't mind custodial wallets. I think the experience is better. I mean, I think you've admitted that. And every time I do it, I have this little jack on my shoulder going, fuck you, Pete. Fuck you. This isn't Bitcoin. But actually, so my experience is I have a connected custodial Lightning wallet with a non-custodial Bitcoin wallet, and I can move in and out very easily. And I'm kind of okay with that experience. I still get the full Bitcoin experience, but I have a very simple Lightning experience, which is much better. I would prefer the whole thing non-custodial, of course. But I think you're asking the right questions. I won't deny it, but I still think these people deserve as much of an opportunity to make money with Bitcoin as the rest of us.
Yeah, but I agree. But now you're talking of a totally different use case that people lazily just are like, yeah, Bitcoin appreciates and people grow wealth with Bitcoin, so use Lightning. You're like, what? Lightning is not that, you know, right? Like if you are using Bitcoin as a portfolio asset, as a savings technology, put it away. Store it somewhere else. Don't touch it. It's definitely don't spend it at the local pub.
But I think what it is... It's an opportunity there where he can say to people, here's your Bitcoin that you've earned. If you want to have it, some of it in Lightning, spend it, great. Like, by the way, I saw them getting paid. They don't all get Lightning. There's one guy specifically said he only wants Bitcoin. they have the choice and the opportunity. So I doubt he wants an infrastructure where he has Bitcoin and Jack Bucks, because that's two things to think about. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, look, he does educational sessions with them. He's trying to teach them about Bitcoin, but you know, he can't help the fact that they want to spend a bit. And actually, in some of it, this actually helps top up the income of the family, because these are quite poor people. So look, I understand what you're saying. I think it's good, but I think there's a lot of work there to be done and they need help and support. And I think somebody really needs to think through this whole situation. Like, what is the benefit to these people? What infrastructure should they have? What wallets should they be using? What's, you know, what education should be provided? And if somebody solves this, you can export this to billions of people.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think it kind of feels to me like 2017 almost, when that's when I first started to get really public about my Lightning involvement. And it was kind of the same thing, as people were like, oh, it's not ready. Like, let's focus on UASF or whatever. And I was like, no, someone's got to do it. Someone's got to build an open source wallet, demo it on Twitter, make it humanizable, relatable. And I kind of feel the same type of like responsibility now. Someone's got to start asking the hard questions of, you know, how many, you know, custodial tipping services or like screencasts on Twitter can we post before? Like, let's figure it out. Seriously, like, why does it matter? Who cares? Why is it valuable? Like, let's do some user. I spent the last 4 months like serious user research trying to understand, you know, outside of crypto Twitter, who cheers this thing on because they want Bitcoin to be 50K. Like, who cares? Like, I can buy coffee with my Visa. Who cares? And I like, someone's got to ask those questions. I think so.
That means you're in a very different place from when we first spoke in March. Then you've been through an experience.
Yeah. We did a lot of research with this Olympus thing. So the Olympus release was funny because the amount of beta signups we got, thousands. So like,
and you were very excited about the release, right?
Of course. And we got far too many beta signups, which like defeated the purpose of a beta. Like, the beta is like, if you have the balls to test this thing that's really dangerous, you should do it. And then here's this list of thousands of people. So we're like, all right, well, I can't just unleash it. So it ended up being this more controlled beta. But we learned a ton, like why Lightning is valuable. Some of the issues that a mainstream audience would have with Lightning, like, for example, in the United States, buying a coffee with Lightning incurs serious tax consequences. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin's taxed as property. You incur capital gains. And so every single Lightning payment that's outgoing from your wallet, you have to report to the IRS. Like, that's huge. Mm-hmm. Like, having Starbucks accept Lightning payments and expecting consumers to report their Frappuccino to the IRS is ridiculous. Volatility for a unit of exchange is a non-starter. You know, people were buying Bitcoin through Olympus onto their Zap wallet and the price would go up 5% and they'd be like, fuck spending this thing. Mm-hmm. This thing's brilliant. Or it would go down 5% and they'd be like, fuck spending this thing. I'm going to wait for it to go back up. I'm not spending at a loss. Volatility is just a non-starter for like mainstream commerce. And then you have this sort of totally opposing view of mainstream. You know, so in the mainstream, where Lightning is really valuable is I can send money anywhere in the world faster and cheaper than anyone else. And the value actually physically settles and clears in real time. So there's no chargebacks, there's no issuing credit and debt. This is physical value that's cleared physically, cryptographic proof in real time. It knows no borders and I can do it faster and cheaper than anyone. Visa, Square, I don't care who you are, anybody. Now that's value. That has nothing to do with holding the asset, savings technology. You don't even need to know you're using the asset. It's a rail of physically settling and clearing true value. Then you've got this whole other user base where Zap Desktop is by far and away our most popular Zap wallet, which blew my mind. It was like, how? Our mobile apps are great. Mm-hmm. The reason is because you can download Zap Desktop without giving away any information. If you want to download something from the Apple App Store, you have to give a certain amount of information to Apple. If you want to download something from the Google Play Store, you have to give a certain amount of information to Google. This desktop client can be downloaded from the internet. It comes with a Lightning node. It's totally private. And there's this whole other use case where Lightning is a way to conduct truly private commerce on the internet, right? And so mm-hmm. you've got a tale of two worlds where one like should be inherently Tor, totally non-custodial. You shouldn't have to spend through any given channel. You should be able to craft your own channels, make your channels private. And it's this like black box, dark hole of internet commerce that has never been seen before because the value settles so quickly, so fast, and so cheaply, and you're so private, and you can use things like onion routing and Tor. Now, on the other side of mainstream, you've got these user stories of like, when we're doing our testing, like, would you pay 10 cents for this article? Almost always, it's of course I would. Mm-hmm. Now, would you buy Bitcoin to do that and deposit to this custodial wallet? They're like, no, absolutely not. I have 10 cents in US dollars, and if that's not good enough, I don't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. And so that, those, there's like tale of two worlds of like, the 10 cent micropayment is really valuable because there's no other asset that can physically clear and settle that value as cheap, as fast, and as global as Bitcoin using Lightning. And so that's like a payment rail infrastructure, right? And we can build tools that abstracts Bitcoin away from that user story so that the user that has 10 cents in USD is that that's enough. But then you've got this whole other user of like, Middle East is our biggest user base for Zap, and they all use Zap Desktop, and it's just like rampant usage, tens of thousands of users using this thing. It's crazy. So from my user research, that's kind of where I see Lightning in like a real world application, I guess. Like a lot of these custodial wallets are gonna, like there's gonna be a question on everyone's tax reports in the US, like did you spend Bitcoin or any crypto asset at all? And they come after people like me, and Zap has a big brand, and the IRS is coming, and really gonna, and like custodial wallets are gonna start to have to KYC. We saw it happen to Bottle Pay.
Mm-hmm. That was sad.
Yeah. So I think, anyway, long story short, I think Lightning is about to grow up a little bit, and that you can't just create a tool and tweet about it and like you're done.
Yeah. Well, so there's a few interesting things to pick out there. Like, firstly, just observing your process you're going through there, it's kind of like a step change from Jack being the Lightning wallet developer to somebody who's really considering Lightning and as an opinion leader and a thought leader, somebody who now wants to challenge people and say, hold on, we need to really think about this.
Yeah, well, like, I just feel responsible to do so.
Uh-huh.
Like,
but that's a step change for you.
Kind of. My approach to product has always been the same. It's rooted in where I learned to code. It's just a really practical, honest approach. Like, as a product builder, the best skill you can have is being a good listener, being patient, being open to being wrong, and iterating is the only way to achieve success. You never hit the half-court shot on your first time. You have to listen, iterate, tinker, play with things, try things, not be scared to fail. And so I think that this is just a really natural evolution of like, okay, I got it. Everyone's got a tipping service. Everyone's got a wallet. So what? Who cares? Right? Like, how are a million people going to use this thing? And for what? Who cares? A million people are going to have to care. Do you understand that?
Well, yeah.
And so there's no point in me wasting my time or our time. Like, I think of Bitcoin as like a giant team. Like, I think I'm just feel responsible to do this type of research and this work. Like, when I put Olympus and Zap in front of someone and all of my assumptions are wrong, that was eye-opening for me. And like, judging by the community's reaction to Olympus, we all had the similar assumption, like, this is it, this is going to solve things. And it didn't. And so like, we should just be honest about it. But I'm not like opposing Lightning or anything. I just feel it's a responsible thing to do before we get 100 new custodial wallets. And right, like, what's the point?
Well, but also the second thing was, a number of your criticisms have been put out there before by people who are seen as critics of Bitcoin, maybe Bcashers, maybe Ethereum people. They've made similar criticisms, and most people just come to them and say, FUD, FUD, you're talking FUD. But sometimes do you think perhaps maybe Bitcoiners are too defensive and not realistic?
No.
You don't think that?
I don't know. I don't think anything of that topic.
But these are the same critiques that I've heard. You know, volatility is a problem. The tax obligation is a problem.
Yeah, but volatility is a problem, like, based on my user research. I feel confident and comfortable saying that because I've done the research, and I don't know, maybe in El Salvador it's not, and I can't speak on that.
But is Lightning a toy for Bitcoiners like DAI is a toy for Ethereum holders?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. No, I mean, and so based on our Olympus user research and a lot of things we've done, we've built some incredible products that I'll release after the holidays that I think are going to be really cool. But I think it provides serious value, and it is a better payment rail in a lot of ways than the existing tools that we use to make payments. And okay. So But we'll see. I mean, if I didn't believe in this, I wouldn't be spending my time here. So, yeah, I spend 12 hours a day on it. So, of course, I believe in it.
So it's going to be a big year next year. Mm-hmm. You've just hinted at stuff. Yeah, I think that's about as far as I'm going to push you on that. But yeah. So based on 2020, we consider stuff in years. What are the most important things that you think that people need to be focusing on then?
As far as Lightning goes?
Yeah, but also Bitcoin. We can take it wider. Is it really just having this honest conversation then?
Maybe for Lightning, at least I believe so. I mean, when you have talks with, you know, I got off the phone with Lightning Labs not too long ago, and they were like, what do you think needs to happen for adoption? Like, what merchants need to start accepting it? And it's like, kind of have to humble yourself a little bit. Like, who cares? And you can't be scared to ask that question. So I think, yeah, having an honest conversation about that, but also, like, let me be clear, there's no one at fault. Like, I'm not blaming anyone. Mm-hmm. I think everyone's doing a fantastic job, and the more tools you can get out into the world and the more people interested in testing your stuff, that's how you learn. It's the only way to learn, is you first make it real, you watch it fail, and you learn from it, and then you repeat that process. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think having the real conversation, I think institutions being involved in Lightning is going to be a huge deal in 2020. I experienced that myself. We've got a little like dark pool of liquidity on top of Lightning within these Chicago prop shop trading firms. Uh-huh. And I think institutional Lightning use will be a huge deal.
In what way? How do you think the institutions will be using Lightning?
So right now, first of all, I think that a proprietary trading firm, which is a trading firm that trades their own capital, will be the first like big users of the Lightning Network. And the reason I believe that, well, I'm speaking in context of everyone has this fantasy of exchanges. Once Bitstamp and Kraken and Coinbase turn Lightning on, it's over. The problem with that is that they're in charge of customer funds, right? So they have this security, like the worst thing that can happen to an exchange is it loses customers' funds, right? Uh-huh. Branding done, reputation done, customer relationship done, customer retention done. So here you are proposing this totally new thing, which had a CVE not too long ago, like a few months ago, and asking them to host other people's funds on this infrastructure that's fairly new. Whereas a proprietary trading firm, I'm trading my own money. I got hundreds of millions of dollars of my own money. New technology, if I lose 50 grand, I don't give a fuck. Let's play. Let's do it. And so I'm seeing serious interest from these firms that are managing private capital. The type of risk that they're talking about losing funds on top of Lightning, they don't care. Who cares? Like, they lose 50 grand every single day. So the reason that they're so interested is now we have this Silvergate Exchange Network. Uh-huh. So settling dollars within the community is instant, but Bitcoin isn't. So you have these traders that are trying to pull off this type of arbitrage trades or whatever type of quantitative trades they're doing, and they want to swing Bitcoin around. And also, like the OTC space, a majority of the OTC flow is crossing at spot, which means trading with other desks, right? So if you, Peter McCormick, are a broker and you have a 50 BTC buy and I have a 50 BTC sell, we shouldn't take that flow to the exchange. We should just trade it against each other. And so you have these prop firms and these desks that are coming to me and they're like, hey, can we set up these large private channels with each other and just cross Bitcoin settlement with each other? We all trust each other. So if the channel fails or goes down, I'll just call the guy who's on the other side of Chicago and is like, yo, our channel fucked up. Send me some BTC because, like, whatever, you force closed on me and breached me. And everyone's like, oh, I got you, right? It's a more trusted type of dark pool network, but then these firms can instantly settle, and then you tie that into like Bitfinex. So now you've got an exchange, you've got a dark pool of desks that are with each other. And then now with Olympus, you've got consumer flow with Zap. So like Lightning all of a sudden accomplishes this like vertical from exchange to the OTC desks and prop firms to the consumer of Zap. And you can all like swing Bitcoin around in real time, settle it in real time over Lightning. And you're accomplishing this like vertical run of going from the consumer to the exchange and back through all these prop firms and trading desks. And it's just a fantastic way to improve settlement and efficiency in the market.
But these are large trades, right, you're talking about?
Yeah, well, so like if we're trading over $1 million or something, I would never. But if I'm like dealing with a lot of consumer flow at Zap and we're getting, you know, 5-figure orders a day, I can go push that flow off to a prop firm and be like, I'm on Silvergate, here's the dollars, sling me that coin over Lightning. like right now, like I need it, and it's real time settlement. And so,
and you're comfortable Lightning can handle that?
Yeah, as comfortable as I need to be. Like, mm-hmm. at what, you know what I mean? Like, at what point would I really be comfortable to where nothing can ever go wrong? Never, mm-hmm. right? Of like, course. Bitcoin is in a beta supposedly still. So I'm as comfortable as I need to be to try. And that's the only way we'll be able to report a bug or figure out issues. So yeah, it's at a point where we're just giving it a shot. Why not? Like if a prop firm has a 10 BTC buy order and they want to fill that and they know Genesis has 2 sell, Circle has 2 sell, Kraken Desk has 2 sell, well, I'll sling like 6 BTC over my 3 Lightning channels to those firms, and then I'll sling the rest over to Bitfinex and execute at spot. And all of a sudden, I'm moving this Bitcoin in real time, settling in real time, getting my trades off in real time. Like, that's a drastic improvement. Before, I would either have to wait for confirmations or I'd have to have enough capital to go front on all of these exchanges and desks, where if I had an order, I would hopefully have Bitcoin there already, right? Like fronting my moves. But now this Bitcoin's moving around in real time. It's just like a brilliant.
Yeah, so what's interesting here is that Lightning was obviously seen as a consumer tool for spending Bitcoin, right? But what I'm taking from you here is everything you've said so far, you're seeing it more as an infrastructure for financial systems and business.
Yeah, I had a tweet storm a long time ago. I've always felt that Lightning was marketed in a really lazy way.
Okay.
Right, like the fact that Lightning was always marketed against Visa, I felt was just kind of lazy. Because okay. we don't know, you know, there's that infamous Harvard business study where they were trying to help a fast food restaurant sell more milkshakes. And the restaurant was like, we've come up with all these different flavors and we couldn't figure it out. And the Harvard Business School is like, you have to think of things as if people are hiring a tool. So when someone orders a milkshake, they're hiring a tool to perform a job for them. And they realize that milkshakes are mostly sold in the morning because people like to suck it through the straw on their commute to work. If you've got like a bagel with cream cheese, 2 hands and the phone rings and you've got to switch lanes, that's a disaster. Bananas are healthy and fine, but they're gone before you even get on the highway. So a milkshake, you can suck it through this little straw. You're full until lunch and it takes you your whole hour commute to finish it. And you can do it with 1 hand. And so what Harvard did is they made the straw a little smaller. So it was harder to suck it through and it lasted longer and sales went up. And so I think, you know, that type of product approach is much better. It's really lazy for us to be like, oh, Lightning is a payment rail. Well, fuck Visa. We're here to fuck you up. Maybe, but maybe not. Like, we should think, like, why do people hire Lightning? For what purpose? Why does it actually matter to them? What else would they hire if they didn't have a milkshake? If they didn't have Lightning? If I don't have a milkshake, what else am I hiring? So is a milkshake's competitor not ice cream, but maybe like a bagel and a banana in the morning, which you would have never intuitively thought, but just through this type of product approach, right?
Yeah.
So I think like we need to have more of that. I always thought Lightning was really lazily marketed as like, oh, it's a scaling solution. All right, fuck Visa, which could be true, but also could totally not be true.
So Bitcoin is a secure, honest financial system, and Lightning is the way of moving money around that system fast.
Correct. Yeah. Lightning was intended to be a throughput increase, as Bitcoin had this famed, like, up to 7 transactions per second. And Lightning was going to improve on that metric and enhance some privacy along the way just by the design of the system. But that was it. Now, does that, like, scale to consumer use? Maybe. Does that help efficiency and settlement of the liquidity space, which has been the most important subsector of this industry? It's the only profitable subsector, right? Exchanges are the only real profitable businesses. Traders are the ones really printing money, right? And the liquidity space is the one that attracts all the talent. It attracts all the money. And so, yeah, if I can walk into a prop firm and say, yeah, you guys want to pull off this arbitrage where I can get you to swing Bitcoin anywhere in the world and settle instantly, they're going to be like, sign me up. What are the risks? Well, if a channel fails, you might lose 50 grand. I don't give a fuck. That's like, you know, that's what first movers do. You take that risk, you wear it to the face, and, you know, if it works, you win. If it doesn't, you lose. But that's the game that, like, people, traders, and these guys play. So,
okay, but this is a very different world from a lot of people have seen it.
Yeah, definitely. But like I said, like, why would anyone hire Lightning? For a prop firm, it's become pretty clear to me. And I think that's a much healthier way to think about the product is like, why are you hiring it? A lot of people hire Lightning today to be part of this like Twitter movement and to like be able to tweet their screencasts and stuff, and which is a perfectly fine use case because they are hiring it. But does that scale globally, and are we providing like real value? Like, why would anyone hire it? That's what I always ask, is like, tell me a story. Why'd you hire Lightning? Is what
I guess. I mean, I don't, yeah, I mean, I use Bitcoin. I've told you this before. I invoice in Bitcoin. It's just easier for me, and I convert 75% of every invoice back into, you know, pounds to run my business, and the rest I leave in Bitcoin as a saving mechanism. Mm-hmm. The only way I use Lightning is people tip me. I don't buy stuff with it. Occasionally, like in things like when I was out in Uruguay and Jimmy Song bought my dinner, I paid him back in Lightning just because he wanted it. But I could just as easy given him dollars.
Sure.
I still don't think, I'm with you on, I don't think that big retail use case exists. And I think if you're going to be trying to sign up retailers, it's going to be hard. But yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, well, I'm onto something. I'm also not onto something. Just like a really blunt, honest approach to product is usually the most efficient way to make progress.
All right, man. Well, listen, we did our hour already.
Really?
Yeah. That flew by. Okay, so look, what do you want to tell me about what's coming up next year?
That I just have some stuff to release.
Cool.
So, yeah, I'm trying to release it shortly after the holidays. The holidays kind of got in the way, but I'm pretty excited. And we'll see. It could go really well, or it could be super fucking awful, and both would be okay.
Am I allowed to talk about the fact that I know what it is, but not tell what it is?
Sure.
I mean, I know what it is. I think it's fucking badass.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Like, so I'm gonna talk about it in abstract. I know what it is. I know exactly how I'll use it. I know plenty of problems it solves, and like, I've got real world personal use cases that it will solve. So I can't wait for you to get out there and for people to see it. I think you're really onto something here.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
I've given nothing away there, have I?
No, you're fine. Thank you.
Jack, tell people how to follow you.
I wasn't smart enough to come up with some abstract private name on the internet. So it's my full name everywhere. Jack Mallers on Twitter. You can just, yeah, my DMs are always open. Like I said, you're going to include the accident thing. So Bitcoin is a family to me. Like my dad was hinting at, Bitcoin goes much beyond making money or making products. It's a really a huge part of our family. So I appreciate everyone and thank you for the support.
All right, man. Any closing words, Cookie?
Happy holidays, everybody.
Bill, do you want to say goodbye?
Nope.
He's always a quiet one.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, thank you for having me over. Thank you for lovely
Thanks,
food
Peter,
last,
we love you.
Last night. And I'll see you in the new year. All right. So what did you think of that? Did you enjoy that show? I love these guys. It's always great to hang out with them and always great to listen to Jack talking about Lightning. Also, Bitcoin Mum, she's been so good to me this year. I first met her in San Francisco at an event. She came up and introduced herself. Obviously knew who she was, but it was great to finally meet her. And every time I've ever been anywhere near Boulder, she's always looked after me. She's always like making sure I'm fed. She always wants to make sure I've got somewhere to stay. She is really like my, like I say Bitcoin Mum is everyone's mum, but she really is like my mum. She always makes sure I'm fed, clothed, I've got somewhere to stay. Thank you, Bitcoin Mum. Thank you for looking after me. And thank you for treating me like part of your family whenever I'm in Boulder. So Jack's opinion on Lightning has really shifted, and I'm really starting to get his vision with it. I've always said that Lightning can be a bit confusing, and there can be too many intricacies to get the general public using it, going up from Bitcoin into Lightning. I know a lot of people think, oh, it's amazing, everything's brilliant. But I think coming from a UX perspective, it can be very hard. There is a shift change going into Bitcoin. There's a shift change then going into Lightning. And you know what? Despite what people think, I do understand why people sometimes prefer custodial wallets. They sometimes prefer the UX around that. So I know a lot of this is being abstracted away. There's been so much great work with the UX this year. I do still think volatility is a massive problem. I think that's something Jack agrees with me on. I saw that in El Salvador, and we discussed the volatility problem for retailers. So that's not going to go away. That's something that needs considering. But Jack also told me about what he's been working on for next year, and I can't reveal it, but it's really fucking cool. Like, his ideas about how to use Lightning, honestly, it's mind-blowing. I can't wait for him to release this. I think he's really onto something. He's going to absolutely smash it next year. Anyway, I really enjoyed getting out to Boulder. I really enjoyed recording this one. I will always love the Mallers family, and I will record with them whenever I can. Got any questions about the show, do feel free to hit me up. It's hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Also, thank you to everyone who supported the show this year, from the sponsors to the listeners to the trolls to anyone. Like I say, there's been many ups and downs, but it's just been an incredible year. So if you do want to support the show, if you've enjoyed the show this year, if you want to do something to support it at the end of it, it's all up on my website. Just go to whatbitcoindid.com, click on the support section. It will explain everything you can do. As I said, the year is coming to a close. I've got two more shows. And then we're going to be focusing on 2020, which is going to be the year of video for me. I know nothing about video. I'm buying all the equipment and I will be learning on the job. But I do want to introduce video into what I'm doing. So bear with me. The first few videos will likely be a bit shit. I also want to keep traveling, but I want to get to new countries. I want to find places where Bitcoin is being used or could be used and just go and find out the human stories that are happening there, which will be a nice tie into the video. Anyway, two shows to go. I hope you're having a lovely break. If you've got any questions, do reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.